While breathing in long, one knows, I breathe in long. While breathing out long, one knows, I breathe out long. While breathing in short, one knows, I breathe in short. While breathing out short, one knows, I breathe out short. One trains oneself, sensitive to the whole body, I breathe in. Sensitive to the whole body, I breathe out. One trains oneself, calming the whole body, I breathe in. Calming the whole body, I breathe out. We keep reading the contemplations to you. I think it's quite nice to hear them, and in a way, I can tell you it makes a big difference when you memorize them, when they're just there for you, because then you can just more organically practice. They just kind of arrive when they need to, so we'll just keep hearing them over the retreat. Okay, so we're in the body, I hope. Everyone know where your bum is? we're in the body group, and we're just taking some time, I think time well spent, to really get established in the body. So the first tetrad, so this is that word tetrad, which means a group of four instructions, yeah? So the body tetrad, the first four instructions are initially helping us get established in samatha, or tranquility or calm. But later on, we will purposefully revisit them from more of a vipassana, bhavana, development of wisdom, intention, or you could say dharma vichaya. Poking around and checking it out in a very kind way, a little more of an investigative in terms of what's the nature of having a body, what's this being embodied, a little more. But even in the initial bare attention of the body, there is some wisdom about being embodied that just starts coming through, I think. You know, I think it can very much. So some of that may be arising. And I wanted to say what that is. You'll see. You can see what happens. It's really helpful to set up the conditions for concentration by bringing us to what's actually happening in our breath and body. And because they're tangible, it's much harder to get lost in a story. I mean, it will happen, but in a way there's something tangible there to come back to. There's something a little bit more findable, you could say, than the mind, which is quite slippery and elusive in a way. So we're starting out with something that's a little easier to find. Not to say that it is easy to find, but at least there's a tangible element that we can come on to. And then sometimes it can be very hard. You know, someone tells you something like, just be aware of your foot, and it can just seem like, well, what the hell does that mean? Or how do I do that? You know, it can seem very abstract, but I think just over time, just keep at it. The body will become better known to you. We'll be a little better friends with it. We had a guy in San Francisco who's quite new to meditation, decide just to go on one of these 2-month retreats at Spirit Rock, which is the tradition Jack Kornfield and people like Sharon Salzberg are in. So he went on this 2-month intensive, quite new to meditation. And he came back and he said, well, how'd it go, you know? Glad to see him still alive. And he said, well, after the first month, okay, I was kind of meditating all day for a month. He said, I felt my collar on my neck. And I said, oh, that's what they're talking about in terms of being aware of a bodily sensation. And it was just so, it was great, you know, like real breakthrough moment for him. And it's just, he felt his collar against his neck, you know, so we're just working from where we're starting from. And what's a breakthrough is just whatever opens up things for us. So it can take a while to get proficient at just being able to check in with the body, but after time, if you stick with it, I think it's something that will become possible for you. Ayakema in Who Is Myself, a book, Who Is Myself, which is an excellent companion to the kind of work we will be doing on this retreat, she writes about the advantages of practicing mindfulness of the body. And there's three that she names. The first is that while we practice mindfulness of the body, we are keeping the mind in its place, not allowing it to roam discursively. So it gives the mind a home. Yeah. the second advantage is that mindfulness purifies. So if we're actually watching what we are doing, these are direct quotes from her, we cannot in that moment be upset, angry, or greedy. The Buddha counsels us over and over to use the body as a mindfulness object. In the first place, we can feel the body and touch it. We do not have to search for its presence. If we practice in this way, we will realize in a very short time the peacefulness that arises, the absence of all mental turmoil. For how can we be aggravated or desirous or disliking while we are watching what is actually happening? That last question is great. How can we be aggravated or desirous or disliking while we are watching what is actually happening? I don't know what the answer to that is. You can just figure that out today. And thirdly, body mindfulness keeps us in the present moment, and eventually we may learn that there is no other moment. Body mindfulness keeps us in the present moment, and eventually we may learn that there is no other moment. Tenzin Palmo, who spent a long time in a cave, one of the things she says now is that we have nothing else than this present moment. Yeah, and that's something that we can explore while we're here. Okay, so we already got going on the first two instructions, which was to aim the mind so that we can find the breath, coming to the breath, and then just staying with that experience, just experiencing the breath. And then when the mind slips away, as it will, we just re-aim or re-find that breath, which is always there while we're still alive in this life, and experience it again as best we can. Yeah, just do that over and over. The traditional image is, it's like a bee that comes to a flower, and when it rests and it's gathering the pollen and just tasting the flower. Yeah, so the aiming, coming to, you've got this mind that's buzzing around, and then it lands on the flower, and then it just stays there and enjoys that experience. So there's a quality of enjoyment, I think, in there. And it's something to begin to learn to enjoy whatever's happening, even if the content isn't pleasant in a way. It is possible. Because of the authenticity of being awake, the satisfaction of just being awake and alive to our life, it's possible to have a sense of satisfaction and enjoyment no matter what the content is. And that's something we'll work with. So we're evoking the factors that help build stability of mind, or samatha, sometimes called the dhyana factors. But once we say dhyana, then everyone starts getting graspy and despondent. So they're just things that help us stabilize the mind. And that's vitaka, which was on your sheet yesterday, aiming the mind, and vichara, which is the experiencing. I love one thing in Buddhadasa Bhikkhu's book. He says the Pali and Thai word for this, taking in the experience, is literally to drink, the word to drink. So it's like we're drinking the experience of the moment, tasting its flavor. So as we're doing this, just to remember, it's not a task. It might feel like a task at the moment, but the opportunity is, it's an exploration or a discovery, you know, or a waking up to. And with all the instructions we go into, we have to be careful about just slipping into an attitude that something's supposed to be happening. Yeah. Something quite specific is supposed to be happening, and getting very rigid with it. Yeah. So just enjoying each instruction as an opportunity to notice, become more awake and alive to our life. And one thing I notice, people here don't tend to bow much after a sit. I mean, you bow when you leave the room. Maybe this is my Zen influence, being in the Bay Area, but I highly recommend bowing to whatever just happened. So when I'm done sitting, I bow. I actually do three things. I say, may all beings be well. May all beings be free from suffering, and may we learn to live in peace. So that's a short transference of merit, you could say. Yeah, it's a short, not getting tight about whether I'm collecting good fits, yeah, for my trophy shelf. So whatever just happened, I just give it away. And then I bow. And the bow is more bowing to the sit. So it's being humble. It's like our calculating ego cannot really judge whether it's good or bad anyway. We're such bad judges. We really have no idea. Yeah, we have no. If you just start out just facing it, that we're all completely deluded, then it's pretty easy to just have fun with your meditation. Just start out just facing up to it. Yeah, just face facts and then go from there, really. And again, this evokes that attitude, Suzuki Roshi's attitude. In the expert's mind, there are a few possibilities. And in the beginner's mind, there are many. Yeah. So it might be a quite nice thing for you to try, just to bow to whatever just happened. Even if you have no idea what it was. It could be completely, what? You know, sometimes the bell rings and you think, well, what was that all about, you know? It's like you come to after being in a coma. Don't underestimate. Well, it's all just one process. Yeah, that's part of your life, right there. So, and in general, with the body tetrad, there's kind of a middle way, as with everything in Buddhism, right? So it's a middle way between the two extremes of negating the body. You know, so we see that in the Buddha's life, where he was doing extreme ascetic practices, right? Nearly dying because of it and thinking, well, this isn't going to this isn't working. And the other extreme is just completely identifying with everything. Yeah, you know, that can get us into a state of horrified anxiety. And in a way, on retreat, we cut down a lot of what we can worry about. And in some ways, I notice, you know, like whether the heat's right and whether our food's right. And all, it just almost it's like that's what we have left to worry about. Yeah. So somewhere this awareness that transcends the extremes of contracting around it in these two ways. Yeah. Around pushing it away or around just holding on to the bodily experience. So we have a body, we're aware of it, and we try to do it in this open way. Okay, so sensitive to the whole body, what does that instruction mean? So whole body, sabbakaya, I didn't give you that word, but I think it's sabbakaya. So one aspect of this is that the breath is no longer the exclusive object of focus as it was in the first two instructions. Well, even in the first two instructions, we still want to have some broader awareness. But in a way, we came right onto the breath, yeah, noticing the characteristics of the breath. That was the object of the meditation. And now we're opening up to the whole body. And the breath is still there. It's not like we then try to not have a breath. I mean, the breath is there helping us to concentrate, but it's just like it's opening up a bit, yeah. You can also imagine like a lotus. It needs that feeling of something just opening up. I think another phrase that can be quite helpful is having a 360-degree awareness. That simple, just setting that opening can really help people. I think it's because we're so visual. Sight is such a... We're so biased to it. I know people that start losing their sight, they realize all these other senses start really waking up. So I think that's why we're just so forward-oriented. Sometimes if I don't do this check of 360 degrees, I realize I'm only kind of aware of the front half of my body in a way, and all my attention's kind of going forward. I'm also quite future-oriented. My thoughts almost never go to the past, so that might be it too. So somatically, you know, in the body, I'm kind of forward-tilting. But in a way, I want to rest in the whole body, yeah, so we can have a sense of a 360-degree, above and below as well, actually, sense of awareness opening up. And calming the whole body, well, it's different ways to think about this. We can think of it as our awareness of the body calming, yeah? So it's our quality of attention or our awareness that calms, and that comes from willing for the body to be as it is without reacting. Yeah. So if we get a twitch or a pain, we're quite calm about it in a way. Well, especially with chronic things, I mean, that's kind of interesting, where it's kind of always quite painful in a way. And we just experience it without that edge of hysteria that can kind of come in. Yeah. If we're not careful. So our awareness can calm. But then also the actual experience of the body, the body itself can seem to calm down and become less distracting. And what's happening there, it's like there's a unification of the body with an overall, much more spacious kind of mindfulness. So in a way, it's like we're held in something a bit more spacious, bigger, as opposed to a sense of being quite contracted and tight. Yeah, get the sense of the difference of those two ways of being. I think there's two ways to look at working with the body or our whole experience. And one way of working with ourselves is more of a control or discipline way. And I know that can right away sound either appealing or we have an aversion to it. But it's meant in quite a neutral way. It's a descriptive way of working. Other times we use the word controlling maybe in a bit more of a discriminating way. But this is just to describe a certain way of working. And then the other one is release. So by control, there may be a better word. I'll find a better word the more I think about this. But it's a wise use of discipline. There's a little bit more structure in there. It's not harsh or forced. And if we use this path, we just need to watch out for when we kind of get it wrong, which is getting quite alienated from our experience. Yeah, so in that case, we're staving off our experience. We're using control to keep it away. Yeah. And another way of working is release, which is a way of just letting things be and being with things without changing them at all. The far enemy, you could say, of this is just vagueness and even laziness. Again, it's a way of not working with ourselves. We're not quite applying it as a skillful means. Yeah. And I have a little definition here from Alan Wallace in Buddhism with Attitude, which is where I got this. I think this was a good articulation of our options, our strategy options. And he says, mindfulness is a state of stable attention that may be wide open and spacious or tightly focused as one desires. Buddhism offers many methods of training attentional stability that can be categorized into two basic approaches, control and release. The control approach entails being able to focus and sustain attention on a chosen object at will. The goal of the control model is to become master of one's mind. The second approach to meditative stabilization is the release model. Instead of applying specific antidotes to all the toxins in the mind, one simply tries to stop polluting one's mind stream with grasping onto afflictive thoughts and emotion. This can be done quite simply by maintaining one's awareness without distraction and without mental grasping. The technical term for the release model is settling the mind in its natural state. Okay, so people getting a sense of the difference then?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of one's a little bit more intervening and correcting, guiding, directive. And the other, that's the control, and the release is a bit more. The whole way of working is not adding another layer of anxiety or tightness to whatever's happening. Yeah. So we purify by relaxing and letting go of ego grasping. Yeah. So in working with sensitive to the body and calming the body, the whole body, there are these two approaches. And I have to say, Buddhadasa in his book is not a control freak, but there's more of that control way of working. And Larry Rosenberg's much more of the release way. I mean, he has Zen background, so that's probably the Zen coming out. Yeah. And in a way, it's great. So we in the FWBO, drawing from the whole tradition, it's like we can be wise in using both as we need them. Sometimes the best thing we can do is really just put energy into focusing on the breath. And that way we did yesterday of really following it continuously, you know, as it goes from the nose right down to the chest, continuously down to the belly, which if the sensation goes down that far, may not, and then continuously out again. That takes a lot of energy, and in a way it's a shorter leash, yeah? But sometimes it's so great. It's just what we need to do to calm the mind down. It's quite disciplined. In a way, that lets everything relax, yeah? Because the mind just stops. It's running all over the place, which is exhausting. And sometimes we just let it run. Just throw the leash away. We just let it run, and in a way it just quiets itself. Something else emerges. In a way, that thinking might still be going on, but it's like another quality of awareness just emerges through that, yeah? So I'd say trying both is the best way to learn your kind of artist's palette. You know, it's kind of something you can dip into and use. And in a way, you just have to learn how to be skillful with yourself. And also, don't assume the same way of doing something will work forever. So That's the nice thing about coming on retreat. You just try something different and realize, oh, I thought I was being really controlling, but actually I've been incredibly lazy. Oops. You know, sometimes it's just hard to know. I was telling Vijamala a story about this dog I had to walk. I offered to walk my friend's dog, and it was probably the most unpleasant experience I've ever had. This dog, they got it from the pound, so it was already very adult, and it had never really been trained. And it's very sweet, I mean, very friendly. He had to love this dog. But it was so all over the place, you know. And they told me, don't let it eat chicken bones, okay, because it can choke on them. Where I live is very urban, and I have just never realized how many chicken bones are lying around the street. I've never seen a single chicken bone on the street in my life. But there were like 50 of them all over the place. And this dog was just constantly just running all over the place trying to find these bones and finding every single one. And I had one of those leashes that retracts, you know? It was awful, just constantly snapping back this dog, and it would be running and jerked back and running, jerked back, like half an hour of this. And it was awful. But it was pretty bone good. So that might sound familiar in terms of us meditating. It was also kind of comical all the time. You know? I was like, look, I'm trying to do this for your own good. You know? Okay, so luckily for us, I don't think there's any... Well, are there chicken bones? We'll have to go and see, yeah. I kind of feel like there's nothing that will kill us in meditation. There's nothing that's actually going to kill us. So, well, it might be useful just to let the leash go, just to see what happens. And we'll try a little bit of that, just to let it go. And then it might be useful just to see, what is that rope of mindfulness that sometimes gets spoken about? That is an image that's used, tying our mind with the rope of mindfulness. But is there a way to do that? It isn't really just this awful jerking back, you know, snapping the neck back. Is there a way to have that that's a little bit more helpful? I don't know. We can see. All right, in the control approach then, maybe I'll just start calling it the wise discipline approach. I like that better. Does that sound better? The wise discipline approach. Let's use that. Okay, the wise discipline approach. Well, I think the wise discipline approach is always using paticca-samuppada in a way that's non-suffering, you know, in a way that causes more liberation. Yeah. So here we learn that the breath and the body and the mind influence each other. I'm going to be asking us just to notice what's different along the way as we sit, you know. So we'll do a period of meditation just to notice what's different as we go sit, walk, sit. And just, we're just going to notice that. It will help us. So the breath conditions the body. The body also conditions the breath. The quality of mind conditions the breath, conditions the body. The quality of breath and body condition the mind. They're just in this mutual unfolding. So one way that the whole body calms is by the breath calming. We can do this outside of meditation, help this process along where we're not doing breath exercises. I think breath exercises actually can help the overall context we're working in. So there's two ways to more actively intervene here and help things along. One is just strengthening our concentration on the breath. So as we get more concentrated, the breath will change. Awareness changes the quality of breath. So we make an effort to keep our attention with the breath, moment by moment, unwavering. Yeah? It's like a doorway to something else. It's a doorway into a more spacious experience, a calmer experience. And another way this can be done is by allowing the breath to lengthen. So this is the allowing the breath to lengthen is a very important way to put it. Because if we forcibly lengthen the breath, it just makes us tense, which doesn't calm things. So if we relax our holding, if we relax our tenseness, then we can sort of just allow the breath to unfold and it might just be calmer. Maybe a little bit longer, maybe a little bit lower. Not so contracted, yeah? So it's more not doing than a doing. Yeah. It's more doing as little as possible to breathe, really. Okay, so then in the release approach, there's just letting the body be as it is in each moment. So be willing to experience whatever's going on. Yeah. discomfort. Actually, I think the hindrances manifest in the body. You know, wanting, that state of wanting, craving, that manifests. It has a somatic or a bodily equivalent to it. Not wanting kind of manifests in the body as well. Doubting, not sure if your meditation is going to be worth anything. That can manifest as just the urge to leave the room, that feeling of wanting to get up or pass out, one or the other. So there's different ways you could explore. The hindrances manifest in the body, and I talked about that way we're working with the hindrances of just simply acknowledging them and actually being willing to experience them, that they are happening. And then after that, then sort of coming back, yeah, as opposed to pushing away that something's even happening, the hindrances are even happening. So in the release model, we can just experience, just be willing for them to be sort of arising. And in a way, if we fully acknowledge these states that take us away from the present moment, in a way we come back to the present moment, because that's what's happening, yeah? So it's kind of Aikido practice, tricking what's happening by being friendly with the energy. So having some curiosity or kindness and precision and appreciation there. In a way, we can do it all analytically, so we don't need even to analyze hindrances in a way. So today, why don't we just experience the body quite directly without needing the analytical bit? So we might just experience that there's some part of the body we're resisting, experiencing, and if that's the case, so it might very well be an emotion or a mental state manifesting, but we can just kind of work with it on a physical level. So this is my body. I don't seem to want to experience my kneecap or my elbow or my right nostril, whatever it is. And then just gently softening into whatever it is we're resisting so that we can be sensitive to the whole body, that instruction, the whole body. And the breath can help us here. We can just breathe with that part of the body. So in this method, actually, when we calm the reactivity in the mind, it's interesting, the breath tends to change in some way as well. It does tend to change the breath, calm it. Yeah. So read Larry Rosenberg on this, because I think he's really good on this point. He's talking a little bit more about the first two instructions, but it brings us into the rest of the body. Sometimes the breath is very fine, like silk or satin. It enters and exits freely. How wonderful just to be breathing. At other times, it is coarse, more like burlap. It fights its way in and out. Sometimes the breath is so deep and smooth that it affects the whole body, relaxing us profoundly. Other times, it's so short and pinched, hurried and agitated, that our minds and bodies are like that, restless and uncomfortable. It's hard to know what comes first, whether the problem is in the breathing, the body, or the mind. Each part conditions the others. As we practice longer, we come to see that these distinctions are false anyway. These supposed parts of us are really just one thing. But the breath is an extremely sensitive psychic barometer. One of the things you learn about this whole process, the conjunction of mind and body, with the breath, as a meeting place, is that awareness has an extremely powerful effect on it. This isn't a matter of controlling or attempting to change the breath. But as you pay attention, the quality of the breathing changes, perhaps because thinking is diminished. The breath becomes deeper, finer, silkier, more enjoyable, and the body starts to bear the fruits of that, to become more relaxed. This isn't something to try for. Trying actually prevents it. It just reflects the power of mindfulness. You find yourself growing angry or worried, your heart starts to pound, your body to grow tense. But if you can just be with the breath for a while, not suppressing the emotion, but breathing with it, all that changes. The mind grows calm. As the breath goes, so goes the body. Something happens when mindfulness touches breathing. Its quality changes for the better. But it is important to emphasize, in discussing the art of meditation, and the practice as you continue it becomes an art with many subtle nuances, that you shouldn't start out with some idea of gaining. This is the deepest paradox in all of meditation. We want to get somewhere. We wouldn't have taken up the practice if we didn't. But the way to get there is to just be fully here. The way to get from point A to point B is to really be at A. When we follow the breathing in hope of becoming something better, we are compromising our connection to the present, which is all we ever have. If your breathing is shallow, your mind and body restless, let them be that way for as long as they need to. Just watch them. The first law of Buddhism is that everything is constantly changing. No one is saying that the breath should be some particular way all the time. If you find yourself disappointed with your meditation, there's a good chance that some idea of gaining is present. See that and let it go. However your practice seems to you, cherish it just the way it is. You may think that you want it to change, but that act of acceptance is in itself a major change. It has the dynamic power to take your mind into stability and serenity, which are at the core of the first four contemplations.